Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
You know that's the sound of another sale on your online Shopify store. But did you know Shopify powers selling in person, too? That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in-line and online. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/truecrime.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening, smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, a great Reasonable Doubt plan for you guys today. Well, as a matter of fact, I already heard it. It was excellent. Took a deep dive into the Cosby case and many others as well. First, 8sleep.com. Chronic sleep deprivation leads to depression, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease. We need our sleep. A nice 8 hours feels great. One of sleep's biggest problems, temperature. Oh, my whole life growing up in the San Fernando Valley, no air, just sweating through. I was going to say the mattress and the box spring, but we didn't have a box spring. We just had a mattress. Tossing and turning, jumping into the neighbor's pool in the middle of the night, hosing myself down. God, when it's hot, it is so bad for sleep. The Pod by 8 Sleep, high-tech bed designed to achieve optimal sleep, developed by sleep researchers after tracking 43 million hours of sleep. Combines dynamic temperature regulation and sleep tracking. It learns your habits and adjusts the temperature automatically. Oh, where were you my whole life? Try the Pod for 100 nights, and if you don't love it, they'll refund your purchase and arrange a free pickup. So for a limited time, get $150 off your purchase at 8, spell it out, 8sleep.com/doubt. That's E-I-G-H-T, sleep.com/doubt. Pluto TV, the leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 channels and thousands of movies on demand completely free. Pluto TV never asks for a credit card. You don't even need to sign up to watch for free. Pluto TV is easy. It's completely legal. And it's the best way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies for free. You never pay for TV again by downloading Pluto TV. Not sure what you're waiting for. You can be rolling in a matter of moments. Download Pluto TV for free on all your favorite devices. Do it today, including your phone and Roku and Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smart TVs, PlayStations, and anywhere else you stream. And also, don't forget about my channel, Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y, Chassis Channel. Number 501. It is the best. It is Pluto TV.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on, and welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus in Manhattan.
I am in Manhattan feeling good, feeling very good, actually. How about you?
I am in Glendale and feeling very good myself. So there's much to talk about. I don't know if you want to start or you want me to start.
There's so much to talk about. Yeah. Gary, you know what I want to start with, because it's fascinated me the whole week. I sent to Gary today. Do you have the John? Well, I'll set it up. This week, the judge who we've talked about before in the Michael Flynn case, Emmett Sullivan, ordered the government to not only supply the transcript, and Gary can probably read that, and I don't know how we want to set it up, but also ordered the government to post the audio recording of John Dowd, who was then President Trump's lawyer, calling Kellner at Covington and Burling, who was Michael Flynn's lawyer, and leaving him a voicemail. You have it, Gary?
I do. Here we go.
Okay.
Hold on. Hold on 1 second, Gary. Let's just set the table for a second. Flynn is a decorated serviceman who was a very high up in the Trump cabinet, got pulled in and interviewed by the FBI or CIA.
Yeah, he was the national security advisor.
Right.
He was I forget his level, but he was a general or a variation of a general during Obama. Either resigned
Lieutenant
or
general.
Was, you know.
Lieutenant general, yeah.
And wasn't he perp walked out the door by the Obama administration?
I guess. We'll figure it out.
You and I, Adam, have talked about, I think the then handsome Deputy AG, Sally Yates, went to the White House to warn them about him. Then shortly after that, there was a conversation, and this is why it's topical. They ended up firing him, presumably because he was not truthful with Mike Pence. Then Trump supposedly told Comey, go easy on him. And then Comey was fired. And then he was supposed to be, Flynn was prosecuted by the special counsel, was supposed to be sentenced. And Judge Emmett Sullivan said at the sentencing, when he was still represented by Kellner at Covington and Burling, that he was basically not going to go along with the 0 to 6 month recommendation, that arguably Flynn had sold out his country or something to that effect.
All right. So now we'll listen to the conversation or the recording.
It's a voicemail from John Dowd to Michael Flynn's lawyer, whose name is Robert Kellner.
All right. And Dowd is Trump's attorney.
Dowd was Trump's attorney.
Was Trump's attorney. Sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, Rob. This is John again. Maybe I'm sympathetic. I understand your situation, but let me see if I can't state it in starker terms. If you have... It wouldn't surprise me if you've gone on to make a deal and work with the government. I understand that you can't join a joint defense. That's one thing. If, on the other hand, there's information that implicates the president, then we've got a national security issue, or maybe a national security issue. I don't know. Some issue we've got to deal with, not only for the president, but for the country. So, then we need some kind of heads up, just for the sake of protecting all interests if we can, without you having to give up any confidential information. So, and if it's the former, then, remember what we've always said about the president and his feeling toward Flynn. That still remains. But in any event, let me know. And I appreciate your listening and taking the time. Thanks, Paul.
So what do you make of that?
Well, so there's all kinds of, this is a great example of, okay, we've now heard in real time what it is. The transcript was related, or it was, parts of it were excerpted in the Mueller report. John Dowd was very upset about the way it was excerpted in the Mueller report and said he had been smeared. Since this has been released, people are claiming he obstructed justice. Now, You listen to that as a layperson. Before I break it down, I'm very curious. I'm always curious to hear your take on it before I've kind of dove in. What's your take on this?
I didn't have a lot of context to it, so I was having difficulty kind of figuring out. My compass was spinning around a little. I did hear him say, like, don't give us anything that's confidential or has to do with something. And then he said something about the president, you know, likes him or something. But I couldn't really you know what I was thinking the whole time? One of the things I was thinking the whole time is, why would an attorney leave a, you know, it's like in those movies where they find the guy, the murderer's list, the shopping list, you know, duct tape, right. Noose, right. Zip ties, ether rag, you know what I mean? And you think, why would someone make that and then leave it behind, you know? So why would a seasoned attorney record a bunch of stuff that was illegal or showed whatever, treason or collusion or something? Why would he leave that as a message?
So this is what's infuriating to me, but is also kind of at the heart of our partisan divide. So I saw the original portion in the Mueller report, and I tended to err on the side of, wow, this doesn't look good. Then I heard John Dowd say, you know, what the hell? And then the audio gets posted by Judge Sullivan, who I can't tell you, and I've said this before, almost a year ago on this show, there's so much respect for. I have not appeared in front of him, but I've done a panel with him, and he's just, to my mind, he's exactly what a federal judge should be. So I listen to this, and I've seen people on Twitter saying, oh my God, this is obstruction, and this is what, I now know why Mueller said obstruction, and blah, 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 blah. Okay, first of all, let's just break it down. The first thing he said was, if you're pulling out, basically, the joint defense, let me explain what that is. If they're coming after Flynn, who's represented by a guy from Covington and Berlin, the president, and a number of other people, whether it's Jared or Don Jr., what you enter into so that the lawyers can defend against this, because obviously the government always has the ability to charge a conspiracy, so you have to be very careful. You've got a Sixth Amendment right to have a lawyer. And the lawyer wants to talk to the other lawyers, but the targets themselves, Flynn, Trump, Jared Kushner, Don Jr., if they talk to each other, that the government's going to use that and say, aha! He's part of the ongoing conspiracy. So as lawyers, you enter into a joint defense agreement, which means we can talk amongst ourselves. The privilege or work product extends to the discussions we're having, so we can talk together. And what he's saying is, and generally what happens, and this isn't anything nefarious, if you enter into plea negotiations with the government, and in this case, it would have been Flynn, or you're going to plead, you have to withdraw because the government doesn't want to intrude on the attorney-client privilege, and you don't want some guy, you know, rolling on you or rolling on your client.
You have to withdraw. So there's there's me, you, and Gary.
It's me, you, and Drew, and Gary.
We're in a room, and we have an agreement that we can share all the information that's germane to our situation.
And we're in a conspiracy to take down Mayor Eric Garcetti for his criminal attempt to have the homeless take over Los Angeles.
Right. But at some point, I announce that I'm now been selected as district selectman by Mayor Garcetti, and I'm going to go work for Garcetti, or I'm going to strike a deal with Garcetti, and then you say,
even more importantly, Garcetti gets the city attorney to say, I'm going to prosecute Adam for aiding and abetting the homeless on the streets.
Right.
And you say, okay, I'll plead to that.
Right. And now I'm out of the circle of trust.
Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. So do you do the honorable thing and tell me, Drew and Gary, or are you like a little snake?
Right, which is I'm cutting a deal, but I'm not saying anything in the circle.
Exactly. And so that's where Dowd starts off, basically saying, "Yeah, hey, Kellner, you've got radio, you've gone radio silent. I understand if you, you know, are doing a plea and you're withdrawing from the joint defense, but," and then he gets to level number two.
Which is now, so
level number two, yes, is, and this is where the fundamental, and it strikes at the issue of the Mueller report, the Barr interpretation and everything else. Their argument is, and the argument about Flynn is that Flynn jump started foreign policy discussions with foreign powers before Trump was sworn in. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So November he gets elected, December calls are being made, and then Trump gets sworn in January. February is when all hell breaks loose, and they start going back and looking at the December calls, post-election, pre-inauguration.
Mm-hmm.
Have I laid it out?
Yep.
Okay. So they're saying that somehow, and Judge Sullivan, who knows more than anybody about this, and I've said, he thinks there's a selling out your country. So I don't know what he's referring to, but what he's asked to be posted, which is John Dowd's call, I agree with John Dowd that when you hear it in context, okay, yes, he says the president, you know, likes you or this or that. Okay, is that obstruction? He's not saying don't lie. He's not saying don't cooperate. He's just saying, basically, we're not rolling on you.
Right, right. Yeah, and we've kind of gone at this for a while, and there's – it just depends. You know, beauty is in the ear of the beholder, or justice is in the ear of the beholder, I guess, because that's where we're at now. One side of the aisle is going to hear it as one way. The other side of the aisle is going to hear it as another way. But we can't have that much interpretation for the law or in the law. Like, at some point, we're just going to need to set a mark. And if you cross it, you cross it. And if you come right up to it, then you come right up to it. But there needs to be a line called the law, because otherwise, this is Sodom and Gomorrah. Like, if there's no law, if there's no line in the law, I mean, just like we have to have it for assault. You know what I mean? Like, bad vibes or bad words or whatever can't be assault. You have to sort of put your hands on somebody to be have an aggravated assault thing. If there's no hands, but we know what was in your heart, or we know what you were thinking, or the person felt like you assaulted them, we're getting into a blurry, murky world where it's up to everyone's feelings versus a clear-cut definition of the law.
It's exactly right. I mean, you pinned it down. This is literally insanity. The people who say, and this is where I take a little issue, and I've said before, because when we were analyzing the Mueller report, I've been very complimentary. I remain very complimentary on the legal analysis. But part of the thing you have to do when you're analyzing anything that's done by a prosecutor or a prosecutorial agency is you have to hear or see the raw data, because prosecutors, like everybody, filter it through their prism. So when they present it in a report, you say to yourself, they take, you know, excerpts of it, you say, wow, that sounds really fucked up. But you then hear it. Does Dowd sound threatened to you?
No. And again, this sounds like maybe a spurious argument, but I don't think seasoned legal professionals leave voice messages of nefarious acts that are illegal. You're almost in a weird way, and look, you call this retarded logic, but in a weird way, the fact that he just left a message suggests to me, with his experience, that he wasn't, at least in his head, colluding or threatening or whatever he's doing, because a seasoned law professional would not leave that on tape.
And by the way, John Dowd, could not have a more sterling reputation. I mean, he is, for whatever you say about him, the guy has existed in the swamp and the, you know, the complete cesspool that is Washington for 40 some odd years. And while I might not agree on everything that he's done in his career, and he obviously would probably push back on mine, he is nothing but a true advocate. What? So the idea that you're just going to trash him, I mean, I can only imagine what Dowd's thinking. Dowd's probably thinking, oh, you want to, you know, Mueller's going to do this to me? Let me try to do some excerpts about Mueller and his team. I can only imagine.
Well, so just in a nutshell, that recording we just heard, they took excerpts of it, they put it in black and white, and it looked a little more damning, or quite a bit more damning, in black and white with the excerpts of it. Now, hearing it, it didn't sound nearly as damning. Who released the audio tape?
The judge. Judge Sullivan ordered that it be posted, which the government did.
And that's the judge in the Flynn case that you respect.
Yeah, the judge who's presiding over the Flynn case, who also I've always said nothing but good things about Judge Sullivan. He obviously saw something in what's been supplied to him that troubled him greatly. So whatever we're talking about now, we're not being able to see.
All right. So we'll get to that in a second, or we'll put a pin in that for a second. I have questions about Manafort got sent to Rikers and put in solitary, so they say. I'm interested. I always think about you when I hear about this kind of stuff. Folks.
Well, yeah, which I want to talk about. But you've got something you want to tell us about.
I'll let you pour yourself a cocktail, and I'll tell you about the teencounseling.com. Connect your 13 to 19-year-old with a licensed professional counselor and do it where they spend all their time on their phone, on their smartphone. They don't have to go into an office or wait out in a parking lot or do any of that. Starts with a short questionnaire to help them understand your teen and their needs. Then you're matched with an available therapist to start communicating within 24 hours. You can review their credentials and directly communicate with the counselor to make sure it's a good fit. Easy and free to change counselors if that's needed. More affordable than traditional counseling, and financial aid is available. So kids are out there. They're exposed to a lot of stuff on the internet, all the violent video games and all the junk on YouTube. They need to get their head straight. And for that, there's teencounseling.com/doubt. So visit teencounseling.com/doubt. Help your teen take charge of their mental health and get a 10% discount when you use hashtag, or I should say when you do slash doubt at teen counseling. So what's going on? Why I was listening to Dershowitz. I was listening to him talk about Manafort moving or being transferred to Rikers and why they would do that. Do you have thoughts on that?
Okay. This is the most amazing kind of parallel that I've talked about. You know better than anybody. Every time we talk about the Mueller investigation in Russia, I always default to Whitewater and Susan McDougall. And I'm fixated on it because the parallels are unbelievable. So when Susan was convicted, before I represented her, she was on trial with the then governor of Arkansas, Jim Guy Tucker, and her husband. She gets convicted sometime in the 90s, and that's federally. Then when she wouldn't testify in front of the grand jury, just like Manafort won't cooperate or his cooperation is deemed ineffective, you know what they did with Susan? They took her, and I learned this afterwards when I heard the tapes, they had put her at the Carswell, Texas federal medical facility, and she was intercepted talking to her mother going, "Mama, it's so great here. I love it here." And they heard that. Ken Starr heard that. The independent counsel heard that. And they had her dragged to Sybil Brand in L.A., which was a woman's county jail, state facility, just like Rikers is a New York facility. Rikers is notorious. Sybil Brand back then was notorious. Rikers will probably be shut down. Sybil Brand was shut down. And they put Susan into Murderer's Row to get her to cooperate, to get her, to force her to roll over. So the parallels to me are eerie.
Well, I don't know how, you know, what I'm curious about when I talk to you with all your legal expertise is I get what they want. Everyone has what they want, but at a certain point you have to justify what you want. And you can say, well, if we're going to do a trial for him in the state of New York, then we would transfer him to a local facility like Rikers. Right, but you would do it days before the event, not a year before the event, or however long, if that's even on the calendar or not. So what would they say as to, and when you go to Rikers, then you have to go to solitary in Rikers because you're not going to last in general pop at Rikers.
I'm reading about it, though. The solitary aspect means, according to this New York Times article, that he would be kept in like an 8-unit setup. So he, and during the day, they're not kept in their cells, so they get to go into a big room with a TV. So it doesn't sound that bad. It's him and 7 other dudes with 2 TVs and a common room.
Okay. But
yeah, it's what they used to say about McDougal. They'd say, oh, when I would say she's on Murderer's Row, they go, no. She's up there in protected custody. She's got her own cell. She's got her own toilet. This is like the Four Seasons of women's jails. And you go over there and you look at it and you say, oh, my, I mean, you would literally not put your worst enemy in this facility. And Rikers is the same way. And, you know, the only reason, let's be honest, that Manafort is being prosecuted by the state is because they're deathly afraid that Trump will pardon him.
Right.
Because if he pardons him for the federal, then what do? So this is the way to do it. They prosecute him by the state.
Right. And Trump can't pardon the state.
He cannot pardon the state.
Right.
And Cuomo, who is the governor, is not going to pardon Manafort.
Right. But what is their reason for the transport? I know they transfer.
It's exactly what they did with McDougal. They couldn't coerce, for lack of a better term, cooperation federally. So they said, okay, we'll send you to the state and we'll see what we can do with the state. It's exactly what they did with Susan McDougal.
They prosecuted
her. They convicted her. They had her sentenced federally. She wouldn't cooperate, and so they shipped her to the state of California. They've done it here in the state of New York.
I completely agree. What I'm saying is the way our legal system works is you go down the grapevine and you're driving to the Pebble Beach, and there's cops with radar or LIDAR all over the dash of their car, and they're coming the other way on the grapevine. You're going north, they're going south. They pass you, you're going 81 miles an hour. They hook a U-turn, go through the median, fishtail, kick a bunch of gravel up, come flying up behind you at 105 miles an hour, and then they charge you with speeding, give you a $300 ticket, and explain it was dangerous. What you were doing was dangerous, and that's why we have to do it. Now, we know it's a ticket-riding party, and we know that's how they raise money. We know it's a money grab. But when you say to them, what's going on with all the chicken shit tickets? They don't go, it's a money grab. They go, it's a safety issue. So they're full of shit. I mean, the government's full of shit all the time with everything, but they at least have some semblance of an answer. And it's never, oh, we're out, we're trying to get money from taxpayers. It's, we're trying to, this is a safety issue, which isn't a safety issue. So
I'll take it one step more. I had a case once, which I think is more analogous. And this probably goes back 20 years. The feds had a wiretap. The wiretap showed or caught my client on the wiretap. But the wiretap had expired and the feds should have shut it down. But they caught that my client supposedly was driving contraband on a particular freeway that I think went through Victorville. So instead of admitting that, what they did was the cop who was illegally surveilling the wiretap, the federal wiretap, gave a bullshit tip, a quote unquote, anonymously to a CHP officer. CHP officer pulls over my client, get this, for illegally crossing over the Gore Point. You know what the Gore Point is?
No.
Gore Point, G-O-R-E, is that kind of triangular painted thing when you go to the left. My guy had crossed over those two Gore Point painted lines. And so it was just a pretext stop.
Right.
They pull him over. They find the contraband. They prosecute him. It became apparent once we started doing discovery, something else was going on. And we determined that, in fact, it was an illegal tip-off off of an illegal wiretap. Case gets thrown out. That's basically what's happening here. I mean, that's
I'm still want to know, they're transferring him to Rikers. They have to give a reason. They can't say we want to sweat him so he'll compose or sing. They have to say it's for his safety or it's for local trial.
No.
They have to say anything?
No, transferring him to the state court jurisdiction.
Right, because they're arraigning him on 16 felony counts for mortgage fraud and stuff. So what they're saying is he has to be in New York to attend his trial.
Right, but is that trial going to begin now?
But what they're doing is they're saying there's something that's called, when you want to prosecute, you have to distinguish between the federal and the state. When you're in federal custody, the state, in order to get you after you've been sentenced, if they want to prosecute you, have to do what's called a writ ad prosequendum. And they have to get the feds to bring you over. And so that's what they're doing. They're saying to the feds, okay, you've sentenced him. He's doing his sentence. Now we want to successively prosecute him.
I get it, but don't you have to have something on the calendar? Like, don't you have to say, we need the defendant working days before?
Him. Yeah, they'll want to arraign him. They'll do, oh, that's easy. They can always do that.
Yeah, I'm just, I still keep doubling and tripling back to, so his trial is now, there's a date for his trial?
There will be. They want jurisdiction. But the fact of transferring him is not suspicious. The fact of charging him with the State Court Act after, that's where he's got a real issue. I mean, I think Manafort's got an issue to challenge it.
Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
No date currently scheduled.
All right. I'm just saying, like, shouldn't I, as somebody who, you know, somebody like you went through this with Susan McDougal and stuff like that, wouldn't you think that there should be a law that says we must have a court date on the calendar and then we transfer the guilty party or the defendant gets transferred 5 working days before the trial begins? It seems.
Guess what? 60 seconds, I'll tell you. Mm-hmm. You know why? Because that's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. By the way, I just did it 2 weeks ago. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, listen to my voice, laugh with Adam, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from a smartphone or your house. Just go to TrueCar, enter your license plate number, watch your car's details pop up, answer a couple of questions, get an accurate true cash offer from a local TrueCar certified dealer. It's that freaking easy. After that, just bring your car in. They'll check it out. I did this with them. They'll do it with you together. They walk around. They look at the mileage. They make sure you didn't roll it back like you're some armo. You ask questions. Get the answers you need. There's no surprises. Then leave with just a check and go hammer it at the bank or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, guess what? Check out TrueCar today.
All right, so we'll put Manafort to bed. He's in Rikers, the worst prison
he's
in the world.
He's in Rikers, and he's being put to bed. But look, this is the problem with this stuff. There are all kinds of laws about if you've been prosecuted for behavior. California used to have this. In fact, back when I represented the Japanese OJ, that's a whole different case. This came into full relief in California about 15 years ago. But there used to be a protection under double jeopardy, where if the feds prosecuted you for something and you resolved it, you were found guilty, you were found not guilty, you entered a plea, you couldn't be prosecuted again by the state. That's kind of a concept of double jeopardy and also double punishment. Well, that was always the law in California. It used to be the law in New York. But then when this stuff came up, everybody was worried that, a democratically controlled state, that Trump was going to pardon people and pardon his way out of this. So they started to change the law to say this couldn't happen. Same thing California did with Japanese OJ, saying you couldn't either pardon or double jeopardy or double punish your way out of it. I think it's bullshit because I don't think the government should get a do-over, so to speak. And it doesn't matter on whose ox is getting gored. It's just, it is fundamentally absurd. If you're going to stand trial or deal with a case and enter into a plea, that should be the end of it. You shouldn't be successively prosecuted. That is one of the fundamental things the Constitution is based upon.
I saw two things. One is, I'm curious if you can give us an update or know what's going on with Weinstein. Heard some talk about, I don't know, he might not see the inside of a prison cell. And then also, on a happy and personal note, I was walking my dog a couple days back. I saw a shadowy figure coming the other way on the street. It turns out it was Paulette Garrigus. She was walking as she always does. And this time she had something in her hands. I looked down to notice there were garbage in her hands. And I inquired about the garbage. And she said, I hate it when people litter. And I picked it up. Now, your wife... She's better than all of us because
I was just going to say, because that's not us.
She walks the neighborhood like a catfish swims the bottom of the lake. She goes around. She's like one of those things. Remember those swimming pools that were called Polarises? They had the weird hose on it and they just keep circling around. And once in a while, water would go shooting in the air and they go, what's that thing doing? It's cleaning the pool as you sleep. It's just circling as you sleep. She walks the Badlands of La Cañada and picks up garbage. She wasn't wearing gloves. She didn't have a sack. She was holding one thing that looked like a greasy filter. She was holding a foam thing that was all dirty. And I said, what are you doing with that stuff? And she said, I'm cleaning. It drives me nuts. And there was no trash can in sight either, which meant she was walking for miles with that garbage in her hand.
Paulette is a saint in that respect. I mean, she will walk, she'll pick up garbage, then she'll see the horses, she'll go pet a horse, she'll take a picture, she'll send me the picture and tell me to send it to my client who loves horses. She'll then, reach out to Drew and tell Drew that she understands his typhus rant. or send something else to me and tell me, send this to your client who has the issues with mental illness. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I know. She's a certain breed. I'll tell you, it's one of those things where, look, anyone can be good when you're watching them. This is just her randomly picking up garbage.
Walking for like 2 hours a day around La Cañada like a meter maid.
So Weinstein, there's some talk about...
There's a lot going on with Harvey. So, Ron Sullivan, who was the Harvard professor / dean, who Harvard decided to, kind of cave in to the whiny little kids who felt unsafe because he was exercising the Constitution and the Sixth Amendment. He went south. Jose, who is his last remaining lawyer, I think probably is thinking about exiting. But interestingly, inquiry minds suspect that he's putting together a new team, and it could be quite a formidable team.
Well, if you were a betting man, would you suspect he's going to prison for these alleged crimes?
No, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to say that it will be a eye-opening experience, the quality of the evidence that is being used against him. Based on what I know, and I know, a lot, this thing is not what people think it is. And it's whether if he gets a fair jury and a fair shake, I think it's going to surprise quite a few people.
Well, you're right on with the Cosby trial. You did call that one. By the way, is Cosby, is he going to die in prison?
Unless he gets to an appellate court fairly soon, and I don't know what the state of his health is, but, he's got some issues. Issues meaning there are some substantial appellate issues. I always thought he never should have let Brian Monahan or whatever the guy's name was, who was his first local lawyer, because that guy was, I thought, a quality lawyer, knew the environment, knew the state court, and did a hell of a job the first time around. He should have done whatever it could take to get him to be the lawyer the second time around, because I never thought that the second trial was tried the same way the first was. But it would not surprise me to see his case reversed.
Well,
it's
so,
just, what is he, 80 years old?
He's 81, Gary says. How long has he been in, Gary? Has it been over a year now? And then, Mark, if you're Bill Cosby's attorney, what are you doing right now?
Probably. I won't comment because I was thinking about a fee arbitration. I'm probably trying to find any way possible to expedite the appeal based on his age, or based on his medical condition, and say, look, we need to expedite this. We don't want to continue it. We don't want to get further time to do briefing. We want to get to oral argument. We want your honors to hear the case.
What kind of facility is he in? Is he in a club fed type thing, or is he in prison?
Doesn't sound like it. I'm reading an article where it says that his friends in prison are a former drug lord and a member of the Pagans biker game. He went in September 2018, September 25th to be exact, and his earliest possible release date per his Wikipedia page is September 25th, 2021.
Yeah, and he's in state court. That was a state court case. Almost uniformly, a state court prison or holding facility is exponentially worse than a federal facility.
Right.
Except when you get to Supermax or Leavenworth or a Supermax in Colorado or something like that. The federal system has legitimate kinds of levels or tiers that treat the offender by what they were convicted of, what the sentence was. They take that into account. The state correctional facilities are just more draconian for the most part, generally.
So he's in right now. What's Weinstein doing? Is he just laying low somewhere?
Yeah, he's laying low. He's in. He bounces back and forth between Manhattan and wherever. I actually talk to him with some frequency, and I'll break bread with him on occasion. And I've known him for a number of years. I've known him when he was you know, captain of the universe, or, you know, the head of the universe. And I know him now. I mean, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy to see what happens to people and how they hold up when their life is turned upside down.
What is his demeanor? How, I don't mean to laugh, but I just mean, like, I have noted it's a funny thing. If you hang around long enough, you see people at the height of their powers. You see people on the way down. You see people on the way up. Is his demeanor different now?
You know, I would say, observing Harvey, that whatever therapy he's gone through was effective. I'd love to talk to Drew in the abstract about that, but Harvey is humbled. Obviously, you can't go through something like this not be humbled. You can't go through a divorce without, taking kind of stock of whatever. He's a different guy. He's still clever and witty and sharp, but clearly it's taken a toll on him. That goes without saying.
Is this a safe statement, whether you're talking about Weinstein or Bill Cosby, that 50 years ago there's no such thing as these guys being in any kind of legal jeopardy? That 50 years ago, God. With dudes...
10 years ago, Harvey wouldn't be here.
10 years ago.
10 years ago.
And,
absolutely.
And Bill...
Because, you know, the Cosby, I'm not so sure. Because Cosby... is more complicated just from a legal standpoint. I'll never understand that deposition he took. I'll never understood why he answered the way he did. That deposition was his death knell. And when I talk about the deposition, it's where he admitted to giving quaaludes to somebody and she was basically knocked out. He basically confessed in that deposition. Now, you can make arguments, you know, whichever way you want. And I don't know Bill. I think we've met twice. I didn't have anything to do with his defense. So I'm obviously speculating. And I don't know the ins and outs as to why they gave it. I mean, I think the lawyers at the time had a good faith belief, and this is one of his issues on appeal, that the DA had signed off on, give the deposition, we won't use it against you. To me, that's transactional immunity. And transactional immunity means we're giving you a pass. You can talk and it can't be used against you. Then 10 years later, do they use it against him? Is that unfair? It's going to be up to an appellate court to decide.
How, in terms of give us a deposition, we won't use it against you, what do they need the deposition for?
It was so the woman, the accuser, could proceed with her civil case for money.
Oh,
and she did proceed with her civil case for money, and she did get a check. So,
right.
You know,
that would be your appeal if you're Cosby's lawyer.
And that, to me, that's my appeal. It's like, what the hell? You led me down the primrose path. You told me you weren't going to use it. I decided to proceed along a civil track, a money track. And now you're prosecuting me 10 years later after you're in a heated political election? I mean, there's just something fundamentally wrong with that. You can say whatever you want about him being a predator. I get that. I'm not disputing what anybody wants to take that position. What I'm saying is, if I rely on somebody's promise, who is law enforcement, that says we're not going to prosecute you if you give a deposition, and then 10 years later, you prosecute me when there's a different prosecutor, I don't think that's fair.
Well, the part of the whole Cosby thing that rubbed me the wrong way, maybe it's just sort of the theme for today's Reasonable Doubt, is the prosecutor, the DA, or whomever, announcing as part of their campaign that if elected, they would retry Bill Cosby.
Right, exactly. That's what I say. That's really a campaign promise? If elected, I'll prosecute this guy? How many times have we talked about Bill Barr and what I thought, you know, if it's true that he says you shouldn't use the criminal justice system to weaponize political fights? Well, is there a better example?
I don't know, but it seems to be going on more and more, or maybe we're just awoke to it now.
We may be woke,
but it seems like every time I turn on the news, everyone's just trying to use the system to take somebody down, to either gain favor with the populace and get votes or to gain favor with their party. I mean, you turn on the news, Trump wants to investigate the investigators. Pelosi doesn't want Trump. She wants Trump impeached. To go to jail. She wants to go to jail.
Then Hannity gets upset because Pelosi wants to put him in jail, even though Trump used to do rallies that said lock her up. I mean, it's almost a comedy if you just try to just step back and look at the objective facts. The guy did rallies, lock her up. Now Hannity is appalled that Nancy Pelosi says, I want him in jail. Does anybody think that's funny?
Yeah, it's certainly ironic, and it does make you question everybody all the time because...
It's exactly what I say. It's like, what are we talking about? Who, you know, to just try to be consistent. Don't even, I mean, just at least wink with me when you're saying this, Vince.
All right, well, last topic then, sort of on that topic that we always bring up once a week, which is Trump is now going after... whoever went after him, and he's trying to figure out this Steele dossier, and he's trying to figure out Comey and Brennan and all the folks that are inside who are now out and do all the news channels. Where are we at with that? What's the latest, and what do you know?
There really hasn't been since last week. There hasn't been anything that I've seen that has developed significantly since the appointment of the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, who, by all accounts, is you know, very kind of an aggressive, take-no-prisoners type. I've said before, you were always early money. I always poo-pooed it. It shocks me that they're going in this direction. But if they're going to legitimately go in this direction, then they've got to answer this question. How do you justify going after that and at the same time being Bill Barr and saying, I'm not going to weaponize the criminal justice system for political purposes?
Right, because that's what he's doing. Well,
imagine if there's somebody he's going to go after, if he's... Say it's Comey, say it's Brennan, whoever it is. What's the first thing that their defense lawyer is going to say? They're going to say, seriously, you're going to come after me now after you testified in front of Congress and said, I'm not going to weaponize the criminal justice system? I mean, it's just BS.
Yeah, I concur, but I think we're there. We're getting there.
I think we are. And by the way, I've said it a number of times in the last couple of months. You know, the Republican Party has become the party of criminal defense, which I love. But and the criminal defense mantra is, you know, the investigators need to be investigated for precisely the reasons that Bill Barr, as the attorney general, said, if there was no underlying crime, there can be no obstruction, which is what I argued 20 years ago on McDougal. Which is great. I love it. But at the same time, don't start. And by the way, the first witness I called to McDougal was Hickman Ewing, who was the independent counsel in charge of the Arkansas office of the independent counsel, because I wanted to prove that the investigation was not legitimate. So I get that. But then don't say I'm not going to weaponize the criminal justice system and then do precisely that.
Well, that was really interesting that Susan McDougal was transferred to Sybil Brand the same way Manafort goes to Rikers. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, and Sybil Brand, by the way, was closed down because it was such a, you know, complete piece of crap facility for women, and she was put on Murderer's Row. I mean, it's absolutely identical, and this investigation of the Mueller investigation has played out exactly the way Whitewater has.
Well, in a weird way, can it go any other way? I mean, you it called can't. It a million years ago. It just, we're all humans. We were humans in the 90s and we're humans in the 2000s. And it's always going to go the same. It's always going to just go one direction. That's there's no other way to explain it. Hey, Gary, Sybil Brand. Who was Sybil Brand? And then let me ask you this hypothetical, Mark Garagos. Would you want a prison named after you? Because on one hand, it's an enduring
got a kick out of this. Legacy. Gary will find Sybil Brand was, a great philanthropist.
Yeah, philanthropist and activist, best known locally for her work in improving jail conditions for women in Los Angeles.
All right, but
the worst women's jail of all time was Sybil Brand before they closed it down.
Well, I'm going to bring this full circle because there was a movie called Concrete Jungle from the 80s, which depicted Debs behind bars. It was women and one of the stars, Sybil Danning, a busty blonde from the 80s. So Sybil Brand is not good, but when you put Sybil Danning inside of Sybil Brand, you got a hell of an 80s chick prison movie. Was Sybil Danning in Concrete Jungle, Gary, or was Sybil Danning in Chained Heat? Sybil Danning may have been in Chained Heat, which was another great prison movie of the 80s. They don't need that. That genre is not serviced anymore, Mark. You want to know why? There's something called pornography on everyone's phone. So you can't coax 17-year-olds to see B and C list celebrities get topless anymore in bad prison movies because we have you porn on our telephone.
Well, also Tinder.
That's right. Chained Heat is what Sybil Danning was in?
Correct.
I wonder if Sybil Danning ever went inside of Sybil Brand. All right. I'm getting punchy now. You remember Sybil Danning?
I remember Sybil Danning. I remember Chained Heat. I remember Sybil Brand. And I never saw anything remotely resembling Sybil Danning at Sybil Brand when I was there.
That's a very good point. All right. I will tell you, not Taco Bell material, my stand-up special. It's available at Chassis, C-H-A-S-S-Y. And iTunes and Amazon as well. And coming up this weekend, or this next weekend, June 14th and 15th, at Denver Comedy Works doing stand-up there. Denver Comedy Works South, I should say. Go to adamcroll.com for all the dates. Mark, what do you got?
I got, by the way, Palm Springs VPS right now is the hottest place you could be. Right next to Capri in the Hamptons with the pop-up Brooklyn Chop House, Casa Tropicana in San Clemente, the brilliant Prova Pizza Bar, Grand Central Terminal, and in the Moxie Hotel in Times Square. And as always, 10E Mediterranean Tapas downtown, Engine Company 28 downtown, and LAX Terminal 8.
And check out 22 Hours, An American Nightmare, new horror or sort of true crime podcast on Podcast One. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.